Live from WWDB AM Talk 860 Studios in Philadelphia, this is Unexpected Goals. You give us 1 hour and we'll give you the soccer world. I'm Rich.
And I'm Rusty.
Lots to talk about today, Rust, including a bad weekend for trophy-seeking for Chelsea as Leicester City beat it on an amazing goal by Yuri Tielemans to win the FA Cup final. And then Barcelona's women's team crushed it 4-0 in the Women's Champions League final. Who will Roman Abramovich sack as a result? The title chases in La Liga and Ligue 1 go down to the final match this weekend. Who will emerge victorious between Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid in the former and Lille and PSG in the latter? Scrambles remain in the Premier League and Serie A for Champions League berths, and how a goalie saved one club season by scoring a goal himself in stoppage time. They're calling it Alisson Wonderland. The playoffs began yesterday in the English Championship for the third and final spot for promotion to the Premier League. We'll let you know how those matches turned out. Zinedine Zidane is leaving Real Madrid after this season. Who is in line to take his place? Congratulations to the Broncos of Santa Clara University for winning the women's NCAA Division I soccer crown, their first in 20 years, and for the Marshall Thundering Herd, which pulled off a string of upsets to win the men's NCAA Division I national title yesterday.
And a big shout out to Pedro Dolabella, the number 10 of Marshall, went to the Pennington School in my environmental science class. Great kid, happy for his success.
Absolutely, and what an upset. They beat Clemson, and then they beat Indiana to win it all. One of the four remaining clubs in Europe that was undefeated lost to an arch rival this weekend. We'll tell you who that is and why it wasn't a surprise. Also, a reminder that we are on social media, so check us out on Twitter at UnexGoals and on Facebook. Just look for Unexpected Goals. Follow our personal accounts, too, at Rusty_Gorlick and at Gorlick Rich. This show also streams live on WWDBAM.com. And you can access prior shows on that website as well. And Rusty, we have yet another good day for soccer birthdays.
It always is. We have some legends and a young up-and-coming player. So first up is Eugenie Lassomer, a star striker / midfielder for Olympique Lyon and the French women's national team. She turns 32 today. She is currently on loan to the OL Reign. She'll join them after the June international window. And she has 274 goals in 332
wow.
matches for Lyon and 86 goals and 175 caps for the French national team.
We are not worthy.
That it'll be great to see her stateside this summer. Ryan Sessegnon, a left back for Hoffenheim on loan from Tottenham Hotspur. He turns 21. He's one to watch. Fernando Pacheco, the starting goalkeeper for Deportivo Alaves in La Liga, turns 29. And last but not least, Brad Friedel, former backup goalkeeper for the U.S. men's national team who also played for Aston Villa, Blackburn Rovers, and Tottenham Hotspur, turns 50 today.
And who did he back up on the U.S. men's national team?
Tim Howard.
Casey Keller.
Casey Keller. And Tim Howard for a bit, I assume.
Yes. Rusty, every week we like to introduce our audience to a player they probably haven't heard of before. This one has been described as magisterial.
Yes.
Among other things, who is our breakthrough player of the week?
The magisterial kid, the new Paul Pogba, as Bleacher Report called him, FC Barcelona wonder kid, Elash Mariba, played like a grown man this weekend as he started and played 86 minutes. His team did lose 2-1 to Celta Vigo, though, although he and Lionel Messi put in some great performances against a team coached by former Philadelphia Union player Eduardo Coudet.
That's digging.
Yes, I did. I had to make sure I knew. 92% pass accuracy on 82 touches for Elash Mariba on 62 pass attempts, and he only lost possession 8 times. 8 times he lost possession on 82 touches. That is efficiency right there. In addition to that, he had 3 key passes, 5 out of 6 dribbles completed, 1-4 fouls, and won 9 out of his 12 ground duels. And the 18-year-old put in a performance that some of the best midfielders in the world would dream of if you'd look at those statistics. And then keep in mind that Mariba, he only has 500 La Liga minutes under his belt, but he ranks in the 90th percentile or above among midfielders in the top 5 leagues in the following stats. Non-penalty goals, non-penalty expected goals, shots, assists, pass completion percentage, progressive carries, dribbles completed, touches in the attacking penalty area, and pressures. So small sample size, but the kid can play and he likes to try things. Very well-rounded player, definitely one to watch as he gets more and more playing time in the future for FC Barcelona.
So Russ, who does he qualify for internationally? What country could he play for?
So he could play for Guinea, the African nation, or he could play for Spain. So that could be a war right there. I believe Guinea called him up, but it was either a COVID thing that stopped him or something else. So Spain are obviously going to want him. He's a very good young player, but he could start playing faster for Guinea. So that's certainly one to watch.
For sure. And Russ, our second newest feature has been well-received, the stat of the week. What statistic do you have for us this week?
So we're going FC Barcelona heavy today, and not just because their women's team won the Champions League. Even though they lost to Celta Vigo on the men's side, it has to be Leo Messi and the fact that he completed 15 out of 15 dribble attempts in that 2-1 loss to Celta. In addition to that, he had 111 touches and only lost the ball 21 times, which is pretty great considering he's an attacker and operates in very tight spaces. He also had 10 shot-creating actions for his teammates. Will he play for FC Barcelona after this week, after this season? And if not, where do you think he'll end up?
I think it's probably over in Barcelona. Really? I just think that any turnaround artist or accountant who goes in there will say you really have to trim your budget, and he is a big budget trimming item, as painful as that might be. There are some conversations that will end up in MLS. It would be a huge coup for MLS. He's not coming to MLS. You just read stats that say at the age of 33, he's still very much world class.
Yes.
Whereas some of the 33 to 36 year olds who come over from Europe, it's more of a seniors tour for them. So I still think Manchester City could be a likely destination, and you might as well just give them trophies if they get both Erling Braut Haaland and Lionel Messi to add to their very potent attack. But I would have a hard time seeing him stay in Barcelona. The economics just don't work.
I agree with that, but it's hard to both see him stay, and it's also going to be hard to see him leave. So it's one of those things where it's a bit of a catch-22. But moving on, big time of the year for the managerial merry-go-round. It's time for your segment on endangered managers and managers who deserve recognition. So what do you have for us this week?
Well, the speculation around Roy Hodgson at Crystal Palace has ended. The club announced this morning that this season will be the 73-year-old's last at Selhurst Park. We did some digging, and here are the five considered to be most likely to succeed Hodgson were to leave Palace. In the favorite spot is former Chelsea star and manager Frank Lampard, Burnley manager Sean Dyche, Barnsley manager Valerian Ismail, Swansea City manager Steve Cooper, and former Nice manager and Arsenal great Patrick Vieira. And the problem is, one of the two of Ismail and Cooper could get promoted, and one of them could end up being disappointed, and I don't know if either of them would be the right fit anyway. Dyche keeps you up, and that might be very key for Palace because they're going to have a big roster churn over the summer. And it also stands to reason that Arsenal's Mikel Arteta, who probably hasn't done as bad a job as people think, will be the favorite to be the first manager to get sacked next season if Arsenal does not get off to a good start. But I think that would be the case if Arsenal has a good transfer window. If they don't, it's harder to put them on a hot seat. And that gets us to a manager worthy of recognition, and let's stay with the Barcelona theme. Here's a big congratulations and shout out to Luis Cortes, the manager of the women's team, which upset Chelsea. He is all of 34 years old and took over the club at the end of the season in 2019. He had a two-match playing career and joined Barca 4 years ago as an analyst. He had extensive experience managing youth teams in Catalonia and coached Catalan senior side from 2014 to 2018. He helped Barcelona qualify for the Champions League 2 seasons ago and led them to division titles last season and this season. And from what everybody says, the cognoscenti, this Barcelona team quickly has supplanted Lyon as the team to beat now in the world of women's club football.
And that's just a year or two. I don't think that they played the final of the Women's Champions League because of COVID last season. But before that, Barcelona went up 4-0 on, or no, not Barcelona, Lyon went up 4-0 on Barcelona in the first half of the Champions League final.
Right. So it's been a big turnaround. There were a lot of good players that were very fit, particularly down the wings in that game. And the Chelsea had difficulty staying with them. So now, Rusty, to our soccer tweeter best quote of the weekend. It was a target-rich environment. What do you got?
There's one that just stands out above the rest. I don't know exactly what's said because, unfortunately, Amazon's cameras are not following every move in Tottenham Stadium and training ground, but I assume it went a little bit like this when Harry Kane walked into, I guess, Daniel Levy's office and said, and I quote, or am guessing, I want to leave. He has requested a transfer, Harry Kane, and the question is, where will he end up? Can any teams afford him?
Before we get to that, I just wanted to say, I think it was Richard Jolly, who is very good on Twitter, pointed out that after he scored his goal on a Olivier Giroud-like header for Liverpool at the end of the West Brom match to give Liverpool the win and the crucial 3 points, wasn't it Richard Jolly who tweeted that Alisson Becker now has scored one goal in every 173 matches for Liverpool, while Jamie Carragher scored one goal every 184 matches?
Yes.
And Carragher is a very opinionated pundit. So for those who don't always like their clubs to be on the end of Carragher's comments, I thought that Jolly's comment was pretty funny. Where does he go and who can afford him is a great question, Rusty, because it's a small denominator. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how quickly does Daniel Levy pull the plug? The later he does it, the more it's more difficult it is to shape a team around whoever comes in. You know, they could get, if they do it early and get the right cash, for instance, he can give a chunk to Fiorentina to bring in Dusan Vlahovic. Mm-hmm. He can get another striker who's better than Carlos Vinicius to compete with Vlahovic. He can really rebuild
get some center backs.
The club. He can get some center backs because he has B players there right yeah. now in Eric Dier and Davison Sanchez. He needs some more oomph. And outside of Jose Reguilon, I'm not so sure the back line is that convincing anyway. Mm-hmm. And Hugo Lloris is also getting older. He's not what he once was. So he could do that the way he wasn't successful when he got 5 players for the fee that he got for Gareth Bale 8 years ago, whenever Christian Eriksen was the only one who was any good. Soldado yeah. didn't work out. Some others didn't work out.
Lamela's still there, but he hasn't even lived up to expectations.
That's right. He hasn't. So I think it's a small denominator when you look for Harry Kane. And if I'm Daniel Levy, and this has been rumored, he doesn't want to sell to Manchester City.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, we were talking about this the other day in preparation for the show. We don't believe in soccer right now. There's the equivalent of wins above replacement player in baseball. But let's suppose there's an equivalent of points in the standings per player. Let's suppose Harry Kane has a points per player of, say, 8.5, mm-hmm. and he's one of the highest. He's like in the Mike Trout category in terms of football versus soccer. You're going to lose that 8.5 and give them to somebody else. That's a 17-point swing
yeah.
for you. Whereas if he leaves, you only have to make up the 8.5 points. So I think that the most logical place for him and for Dele Alli is the same place where Kieran Trippier wants to go, and that's Paris Saint-Germain.
Mm.
Now, of course, it's not necessarily the top league, but they have the money, and they are heck-bent on winning a Champions League,
yeah.
as is Harry Kane. I think it could be a very good matchup. Harry goes to PSG. They can pay the money, mm-hmm. and he is out of the Premier League.
And they just re-signed Neymar, so you know that they're going to be competing for a while.
Right, and they might lose Mbappe.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think Mbappe would go to Spurs. As an Arsenal fan, I think I would expire, but I think that that's a logical place. I'm not so sure about Real Madrid because their finances aren't in great shape, mm-hmm. and City, yes, but...
Yeah, and then there, you did say before the show that it could be Bayern Munich if Lewandowski wants to go to the Premier League. But again, I don't think that there would be a swap there for Lewandowski going to Spurs. I think it would have to be Lewandowski maybe going to Chelsea or Manchester City. And then
I don't think Lewandowski would want to go to Spurs.
No.
I think that he would want to go to a club in Champions League play. He had a taste of it 2 years ago. Had he not been hurt, you can make an argument they would be back in the Champions League final. I think it would be them against Man City and yeah. not Chelsea. So I think he'd want to go back. So I don't think that's logical. And mm-hmm. Of course, Levy would ask for cash on top of getting Lewandowski because Lewandowski's a little bit older than Harry Kane.
Yeah.
So I would say right now PSG would be the logical place that Levy would sell to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether Harry Kane will want to go there is another story.
Yeah, and also there's the question about Heung-Min Son, if he'll want to leave.
Right. I think that's a great point. And the other thing is, I think it's going to be hard to repair this. Typically, in the working world, if people make up their minds they want to leave and they get persuaded to stay, more than half of them, maybe 3/4 of them, end up leaving within the next year.
Mm.
So I think this is he has to go.
Yeah.
And if Levy's smart, he doesn't drive too hard a bargain, because if this isn't done at the beginning of the transfer window and it drags into early August, then all of a sudden you're going to have a big hole in your roster. And how are you going to fill it and get all the lads surrounding whoever the new striker is going to be very difficult.
Yeah. And if Son leaves, I'd just go all out for Jadon Sancho. I think, one, he's English. Two, he puts up the numbers. And that's a great combination in the Premier League.
Right, but they would need a striker because yes. I'm not so sure this Trey Cortista or False Nine works with everybody. And I'm not so sure they have one. So they will need a striker or two to compete for that position. And I'm not so sure Carlos Vinicius is one of them. I think they might need two more, and that will cost money.
Mm-hmm. I do like Vlahovic, as you said, though. But moving on, we can get back to Spurs a little bit later if we have time. The end of the season is upon us. Things are going down to the wire in a lot of these leagues. So what are your games of the week for us?
And by the way, it shows our magnanimity because we're Arsenal fans. We really don't like Spurs.
We don't.
We're talking
about we're fans
them.
Of the game.
Yes,
we're
we
fans
are.
Fans of the game.
And it is a beautiful one. So Wednesday, okay, as you know, there are always compelling matchups. But on Wednesday, we have two cup finals. You can't watch them both at the same time because they're on at the same time, or you can't watch them both because they are on at the same time. Atalanta plays Juventus in the final of the Coppa d'Italia, while Monaco plays PSG in the final of the Coup de France. Now, what makes this interesting is Juventus has to, for their own sake, get into the top four to qualify for Champions League play. They're not in, while Atalanta is safely in, and the same for PSG Monaco. Now, Monaco and PSG have to be careful because Monaco is in third place, but only a point ahead of Lyon, and only three Ligue 1 teams get into the Champions League. So they those clubs, three of those four clubs, have to make sure they don't exhaust their guys on Wednesday to win the cups and then lose their wars over the weekend in terms of either Champions League play or, in the case of PSG, league titles. But anyway, those are good. Now, if you're not into those matches and you're a Premier League fan, you got to watch Burnley-Liverpool as Liverpool continues its late-season run for a Champions League berth, and they are a favorite to knock out either Chelsea or Leicester City. So which one are you going to watch?
What are the cup finals? I'm not sure yet. I'll probably have to wait until the lineups come out and see which players are playing, but I think it's got to be one of the cup finals for me because all these teams are really, really entertaining when they're on their game.
See, I think what I'm going to do is have one of the cup finals on and then watch how the games are going on livesoccertv.com so that if any of the, if the match I'm watching becomes a two-goal affair, then I'll switch to another one that might be more compelling. On Thursday, three Copa Libertadores matches are on tap at night, featuring Argentinos Juniors against Atletico Nacional of Colombia, Olimpia of Paraguay against Internacional of Brazil, and Boca Juniors of Argentina against Barcelona of Ecuador. And as a bonus for you, these matches are on at night. Now, Friday, the best match on tap is a playoff game between Blackpool and Oxford United in League One of English football, unless you want to watch Cadiz against Levante in an absolutely meaningless match in La Liga as both clubs are solidly in the mid-table. Saturday, the second match is in the ties between Brentford and Bournemouth, and then Swansea City and Barnsley take place in the English Championship playoffs. Whoever wins on the aggregate will advance to the final match, the £200 million game, and away goals don't count, which is good. So it's just aggregate goals. And right now, Bournemouth is up 1-0 on Brentford and Swansea City is up 1-0 on Barnsley. You also can catch Bayern Munich hosting Augsburg to see if Robert Lewandowski can break Gerd Müller's record for goals in a season. The matches featuring the top Bundesliga clubs are not meaningful as the Champions League berths have been decided, but matches involving three of the four clubs at the bottom of the league bear watching as there remains to be determined which two of those three either will be relegated or in a relegation playoff. So look out for matches involving Cologne, Werder Bremen, and Arminia Bielefeld. Sunday, Atalanta Milan will determine whether Milan will play in the Champions League or the Europa League next season. The latter will be a disappointment for Milan, which led Serie A for about half of the season. Napoli Verona will have a bearing on Napoli's European League next season, Champions or Europa, and Verona is in awful form. While Leicester City hosts Tottenham in a crucial match to determine where Leicester City will play in Europe next season and if Tottenham will qualify for the Europa League. Aston Villa-Chelsea also is a critical one for the Blues, while in La Liga, Atletico Madrid visits relegation-challenged Real Valladolid, while Real Madrid hosts hot, dangerous Villarreal, which is battling for a Europa League place. Both of those matches will determine who wins La Liga. Meanwhile, in Ligue 1, Brest hosts PSG, while Angers hosts Lille, both of which matches will determine who will win Ligue 1. Meanwhile, to cap off your night, you can watch our own Philadelphia Union travel to Washington to play DC United. You got all that.
Wow. Need a deep breath after that.
You do. You do. I think it's hard to pick which ones to watch, but the Spanish and French league matches are certainly something to look out for. And then on Monday, relax and contemplate what just happened and get ready for, among other things, the final match in the English Championship to determine who gets promoted to the Premier League. And, of course, the Europa League and Champions League finals. But you get a rest day on Monday.
I think that's a good thing.
So now, Rusty, it's tactics time. And are we continuing with the Barcelona theme today?
Yes, we are. But we're going with the more successful of the FC Barcelona senior teams. We're talking about the FC Barcelona women's team's masterclass in the Champions League final this weekend. As we said earlier, they beat Chelsea 4-0. Could have been 5-0 if Asisat Oshoala's second half stoppage time goal wasn't video assistant refereed off the board. Luis Cortez's side played in a 4-3-3 and absolutely swarmed Chelsea's players whenever they tried to build out from the back. And it was that pressure that saw Chelsea score an own goal after just 30 seconds elapsed in the first half. It was really that quick, and they just covered so much ground. They pressed in numbers. They did an amazing job of shrinking the field on defense and expanding it in attack, which is, in the simplest terms, exactly what you want to do when you're playing soccer. The players covered so much ground early on that it really looked like Chelsea didn't know what hit them. You hardly see the type of pressing that Barca used in women's football just because the strides of the players are slightly shorter compared to in men's football. But Barcelona took that risk, and obviously it paid off.
Amazing.
It was great to see. Almost Bielsa-like, the pressing
it
early
was.
In the game. And just for reference, their number nine, Jennifer Hermoso,
very good player.
She won three tackles, which is really impressive for a striker, especially just because you're not in as tight spaces when you're defending from the front. Goalkeeper Sandra Paños played a big role in preserving the lead as she made five saves and kept a clean sheet. Offensively, Cortez had his team playing vertically, and at times it just looked way too easy for them to move the ball forward. The AK Martins, former FIFA the best player of the year, breezed by Chelsea defenders all game, and her shot off the crossbar inside the first 30 seconds helped set up the own goal to open the scoring. Chelsea gave up too much space and made it easy for Barca to attack and enter dangerous areas of the pitch, and there are times where Barca played passes into the channels between Chelsea's center backs and fullbacks where the attacker could basically receive the ball uncontested. And if you want to win a Champions League final, that just can't happen.
That's bad.
And Chelsea were really stubborn and just kept playing the ball out of the back early on when it was clear Barcelona were not going to let them do it. Chelsea just couldn't cope with Barcelona's numbers as the winners moved as a team, especially in the first half, and they got such a big lead before the break that the second half hardly mattered.
Rusty, a few things struck me about this match was, one, when you have inexperience in a big match, a good manager of the opposition figures out a way to poke at it, probe it, squeeze it, exploit it. Chelsea's weak points were its fullbacks, their inexperience compared to the rest of the squad, and it showed. And I think the other thing was the fitness level and the athleticism of Barcelona was better than Chelsea's. They just seemed to get to the ball faster, the second balls particularly, yeah. And Chelsea just looked a step slow. And it was a sad day for a wonderful manager, Emma Hayes, who gets kudos everywhere, and for their players. They have other things to play for, but the women's game at the club level internationally is growing by leaps and bounds and just get better and better. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. And in fairness to Chelsea, I think they just had a bad game, and obviously it was a tough day to have a bad game for that Champions League final. But moving on to our global roundup for the Premier League, swung back into action this weekend. Rich, what do you have for us?
Well, it didn't look good for Liverpool in its trip to the West Midlands. Liverpool missed plenty of chances to score and was tied 1-1 going into stoppage time. It was now or never. And Liverpool keeper Alisson Becker, a man in tights, scored on a stunning header at the end of stoppage time to give Liverpool the win and the critical 3 points, giving rise to many a headline that screamed Alisson Wonderland. Liverpool now has a very good chance to finish in fourth and earn the final Champions League berth from the Premier League. To tidy up some details from last week, a lackluster Chelsea side lost at home to opportunistic Arsenal after a horrible error from Jorginho enabled Emile Smith-Rowe to score his first ever Premier League goal, while Liverpool took care of business at Manchester United 4-2 thanks to a brace from Roberto Firmino and goals from now injured Diogo Jota and Mohamed Salah. United fans once again protested and tried to block entrance to the stadium by the team's buses, but to no avail. They even put out some decoy buses to distract the protesting fans. It was a spirited contest with 35 shots. Those were the key matches that bore in the standings going into the weekend. And as we are speaking, Chelsea is playing Leicester City, and early in the second half at the 48-minute mark, Chelsea is up 1-0 on an Antonio Rudiger goal scored right after halftime. This match has huge ramifications for the top four in the Premier League. Sadly, after a magical season, West Ham fizzled out of contention for a Champions League berth on Saturday, drawing 1-1 at Brighton. Brighton took the lead at the 84th minute on a goal from Danny Welbeck, only to have the Hammers equalize 3 minutes later on a goal by Syed Benrahma. But West Ham needed a win and the 3 points that accompanies it to hold out any hopes for fourth place, and they didn't get it. Tottenham, which has not finished below sixth in the past 12 seasons, showed some renewed energy in beating Wolves at home 2-0 behind goals from, who else? Harry Kane and also Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. Spurs were in fine offensive form. They took 24 shots and had 13 on target. And we were joking in preparation for the show that probably in their 3 games prior, they didn't combine for 24 shots or 13 on target.
Or their last 3 games with Jose Mourinho.
Right, that last 3 games for under Jose Mourinho, I think that's better. And why don't we go to the standings, which are a little bit fluid because of games being played as we broadcast on Tuesday. But why don't you take us through?
Yeah, so in first place, obviously, Manchester City with 83 points. They have sealed the title. In second place are Manchester United, I believe, on 71 points because they drew Fulham today. Leicester City and Chelsea are in third and fourth, but that's fluid because of their game. Liverpool is in fifth with 63 points, one point back from Chelsea coming into today. In sixth place and seventh place, tied on 59 points, are Tottenham and West Ham United. And then for third through seventh place in the battle for the top four, Leicester City, they have a really tough schedule. They're playing Chelsea right now, and on Sunday they play Tottenham. Chelsea have Leicester City and then Aston Villa on Sunday. West Ham have West Brom away and then Southampton. Liverpool are at Burnley and then home against Crystal Palace. And then Tottenham are home against Aston Villa and then at Leicester City, while Everton are home against Wolves and at Manchester City.
Yeah, if Leicester City qualifies for the top four, they clearly have earned it with a brutal end of the season
Absolutely.
Schedule. They can't just rest on the laurels of the FA Cup final. They are a very good club. Now, who's leading in what?
So, tied at the top for the Golden Boot race are Harry Kane and Mo Salah with 22 goals apiece. And then for assists, Harry Kane is also at the top of the table with 13, followed by Kevin De Bruyne and Bruno Fernandes, who each have 11. The hottest club in the last 5 matches is Liverpool with 11 points, and several other teams have 10 points in their last 5. And the coldest clubs in their last 5 are 2 teams that will be going down to the championship, Fulham with 1 point and West Brom with 2 points.
Harry Kane has great numbers to be the player of the year in the Premier League. Somehow, something tells me it's going to be Ruben Dias, though, of
Agreed.
I Manchester City. Although, Tom Rennie, friend of the show, says Thomas Suchek, the midfielder for West Ham, should get some consideration.
At least for signing of the season.
Right. Wonderful signing picked out of the Czech League. So the promotion update, the English Championship playoffs began yesterday, Monday, with Bournemouth winning at home against favored Brentford 1-0 on a goal by Arnaud Danjuma-Groeneveld, the Dutch international, in the 55th minute. Brentford managed only one shot on goal in the contest despite having 58% possession. Meanwhile, Swansea City defeated Barnsley on the road 1-0 behind a questionable goal from Andre Ayew, who really did appear to be offside without looking at VAR, but there was no VAR in that league. There is none. Possession and shots were about even, and the key player in the match was Swansea keeper Freddie Woodman. On loan from Newcastle, who is just outstanding between the posts. Newcastle has a couple good goalies already, so you'll see Carl Darlow or Martin Dubravka, maybe one of them move in the offseason, or they'll sell Woodman to Swansea. And as we just said, the second matches are this weekend, and remember that away goals aren't a tiebreaker. if that club, by the way, who wins it all, turns out to be Bournemouth Rusty, then all of the clubs that were relegated a year ago will be promoted again this year. Norwich City, of course, and Watford already automatically qualified for promotion by finishing first and second in the championship.
Wow, wonder if that's ever happened before.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to go to the crack research team in Bucks County to look it up. And just a quick reminder, the leader in goals in the championship was Ivan Toney of Brentford with 31, and the assist leader, Emiliano Buendia of Norwich City with 16. He also had 14 goals as an attacking midfielder. So, Rusty, the intrigue that is behind La Liga, please enlighten us.
Yes, Atletico Madrid, the first team up, they kept their hold on first place, but it was not easy for them. They were tied 0-0 until the 75th minute when Ante Budimir scored for Osasuna to put them up 1-0. Things looked bleak. They looked a little better when left-back Renan Lodi equalized at the 82nd minute, and Diego Simeone and his men put on their happy faces when, who else but Luis Suarez, scored the match winner at the 88th minute and earned a crucial 3 points for Atletico. Apparently, Suarez's goal happened almost at the exact same time that FC Barcelona's replacement for Luis Suarez, Martin Braithwaite, missed a sitter.
That cost them their competition
for the La Liga title.
Against
Celta Vigo, yes. Atletico had 26 shots and 9 on target while holding Osasuna to 5 shots and just 2 on target. Atleti had 77% possession in the match and committed only 2 fouls, which is not a lot for a Diego Simeone team. That's pretty rare compared to Osasuna's 13. You have to give Simeone credit. Against Real Madrid, as we said last week, he relied on tactical fouling. His club had 26 fouls in that match, and they hardly had possession. This week, he changed his tactics, and evidently it worked.
Great tactics. Great manager. I wonder if that's what's looming for Tottenham, if Daniel Levy has been silent and not said much. Maybe there's an existing manager who he's offered a lot of money to come over. It might make sense that it's Simeone, except with all the offensive firepower they have, he is a defensive-minded coach.
Yes, and it would be a third very expensive coach for Tottenham, and I'm not sure if they'll want to do that.
Right.
With how transient the coaching business can be. Real Madrid, they kept pace with a 1-0 win at Athletic Club Bilbao thanks to Nacho's first goal of the season. It wasn't Los Blancos' best effort. They mustered 11 shots, but only 2 on target. But it was enough for the critical 3 points. And speaking of Los Blancos, it came out today that the much maligned, in terms of the French national team, Karim Benzema, has gotten a call-up back to the French team after 6 years.
He's one of the best strikers in the world, and I think that he was viewed previously as a disruptive force, which he might have been.
He was, yes.
And whether it was Raymond Dominic or Didier Deschamps didn't want him, he's in his early 30s. He wants to leave a legacy. He's a great addition because you have to know where he is on the pitch, and he has a cannon for a foot.
Absolutely.
So the French national team is just loaded.
It's going to be a fun Euros watching that team. But perhaps even bigger news for Real Madrid is that Zinedine Zidane, their legendary manager and former player, is leaving the club at the end of the season. Favorites to replace him include former Real Madrid great Raul Gonzalez, who currently coaches their B team, and also known as Raul, by the way.
He was so good he didn't need a last name.
Yes, the famous number 7 for Real Madrid before Cristiano Ronaldo. He also won the UEFA Youth League in 2019-20 with Real Madrid's under-19 team. Also in consideration is former Juventus coach Max Allegri.
He's in consideration for everything.
Yes, he's a great coach. Former German national team coach Joachim Löw and Fernando Hierro, former Real Madrid player who coached the Spanish national team in the 2018 World Cup after Julen Lopetegui was basically kicked out right before the tournament started.
Ridiculous, yes.
That was a wild time. But FC Barcelona, they scored first at home against Celta Vigo on a goal by
who else?
The GOAT, Lionel Messi, only to lose 2-1 thanks to a brace from Santi Mina, who could be on his way to a bigger club this summer. Clement Longley, he hasn't had a good year. He got sent off at the 83rd minute with a second yellow card on a clumsy challenge from behind. Still got caught up to the French national team amongst all of their great center backs, but this loss eliminated Barcelona from title contention. And as we said, it could be Lionel Messi's last match in FC Barcelona uniform. In the battle for the two Europa League spots, Real Sociedad and Real Betis are ahead of Villarreal, with only the narrowest of margins separating the three clubs as we go into the last match of the season. Top four standings after 37 matches, one left, Atletico Madrid 83 points, Real Madrid 81 points, 5 points back, Barcelona on 76, and then in fourth place are Sevilla on 74 points. Atletico Madrid plays Valladolid in the last week of the season, and Real Madrid plays Villarreal. So Real Madrid certainly have the tougher match, definitely ones to watch.
But going up to Basque country and playing Valladolid, which is fighting for its life, is not going to be easy for Atletico.
It is not. It certainly is not. So, Rich, do you want to take us quickly through the statistical leaders in La Liga?
Sure. The goal leader in La Liga is who else? Lionel Messi with 30. The assist leader, Iago Aspas. Celta Vigo with 12. He's held that all year. Hottest clubs in the last five matches, Celta Vigo with 15, Real Madrid with 11 points, and Atletico with 10 out of a possible 15. And a bunch of people in the middle and bottom of the table are the coldest clubs, including Levante with 2, Valladolid with 2, and Granada with 3. Moving on to Serie A. And, you know, there's that old song, que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. Well, whatever will be might be, because a lot of things can happen in Serie A. Atalanta held on to second place with a 4-3 win. And notice we're not talking about Inter Milan because they're in the stratosphere.
Yes.
Atalanta held on to second place with a 4-3 win at Genoa. Atalanta led 3-0 at the half on goals from Duvan Zapata, Ruslan Malinovsky, and Robin Gosens. Genoa got one back right after the half on the first of two goals from Uzbeki international Eldor Shomurodov.
Good pronunciation.
Right, and Mario Pasalic scored what proved to be the game winner 3 minutes later to make it 4-1, and then Genoa scored two more to make things interesting. Atalanta dominated possession, but shots and shots on goal were relatively even. Napoli kept its thin hold by goal differential on third place with a 2-0 win at 10-man Fiorentina thanks to second-half scores by Lorenzo Insigne and a Fiorentina own goal. The Neapolitans had 60% possession, took 21 shots, and had 6 on target. And why they couldn't even let Gennaro Gattuso leave, I do not know.
It's a good question. He's been very good for
them.
He's
been very good for them. So, and we don't know who's replacing him yet. So that will be...
Lots of great Italian coaches out there
who want that job. Milan kept its very thin hold on fourth with a 0-0 draw at home against Cagliari. The hosts had 62% possession and took 21 shots, but only 2 were on target. Cagliari has played well as of late, and they stymied Milan's offense. Juventus, meanwhile, will not go away easily. They beat champion Inter 3-2. Okay, we came to them fourth. In Torino, Juve scored first on a goal by...
Cristiano.
Who else? At the 24th minute on a rebound off a blocked penalty shot, only to have Romelu Lukaku...
Who else?
Equalize 11 minutes later. Then Juan Cuadrado, who is having a marvelous season, scored 3 minutes into stoppage time in the first half on a great strike outside the box to make it 2-1 Juventus. Juve then suffered a setback at the 55th minute. It never can be easy when Rodrigo Betancourt was sent off and a Giorgio Chiellini own goal equalized for Inter at the 83rd minute. But then Cuadrado scored on a penalty at the 88th minute. He drew the penalty as well to give 10-man Juventus the win. Marcelo Brozovic of Inter was sent off 2 minutes into stoppage time at the end of the match. It was a huge 3 points for Juventus. They had only 41% possession, but they outshot Inter 14-8 and had 6 shots on target to Inter's 3. Job well done by Andrea Pirlo's squad when they really needed it.
Yes, indeed. And here are the standings after 37 matches, one match left. First place, obviously, Inter Milan, 88 points. 10 points back is Atalanta. They have 78 and 45 plus 45 goal differential. On the same goal differential, but 2 points back are Napoli in third place. AC Milan are in fourth place with 76 points, tied with Napoli, but have a lesser goal difference. And then in fifth place are Juventus, 75 points with 36 goal difference. And they need to win, and they need some favors from other teams if they want to qualify for the Champions League.
There are a lot of combinations that can happen here that could end up with anything. Atalanta looks like it's clinched because Juventus would have to win by a huge amount And then tie Atalanta for fourth if Atalanta were to lose. And the goal differential right now, the difference is 9 goals, so they have to make that all up. So it looks like Atalanta's safe, but anything can happen among Napoli, Milan, and Juve. And those final games, Rusty, why don't you go through them?
Yeah, so Inter, they play... Ones. they play Udinese, doesn't really matter. But the big match this weekend is Milan at Atalanta. That has clear top four implications, because especially if Atalanta win, then it really opens the door for Juventus, who are at home against Bologna. And then Napoli are at home against a struggling Verona team. So that should be a win for Napoli. But that Atalanta-Milan game is definitely the one to watch this weekend.
So let's say what's likely, Rusty, is this, which is, let's suppose Napoli wins. They have 79 points.
And 81 if they win.
No, if Napoli wins.
Oh, Napoli wins.
Napoli wins, they have 79 points, and let's say they win 2-0 against Verona. They have 47 goal differential. Mm-hmm. Then let's suppose Atalanta draws with Milan. The goal differential stay the same. Atalanta then 79, Napoli then 79, and let's say Napoli comes in second because they're ahead on goal differential by a goal. Mm-hmm.
Then it'd be Milan at 77 points.
Right. So Milan at 77 points, which means Juve has to win.
Yes.
And if Juve wins, they're fourth. And if they don't, they're in fifth. There's no way they tie. So there are a lot of different things that can happen. But suffice it to say that Milan really needs to win at Atalanta. That's going to be very tough.
Yes. And Juventus need to do themselves a favor and win against Bologna.
Which I think they should do. I think the surest bet is Napoli beating Verona. Verona is just in a bad run of form right now. Statistical leaders in Serie A, Cristiano Ronaldo leads in goals scored with 29. Wonder if he will get a 30th to tie Messi for the year. Romelu Lukaku, importantly, is in second with 23. And assist leader Ruslan Malinovsky is having a tremendous year for Atalanta, has 12 goals and Romelu Lukaku has 12 assists and Romelu Lukaku has 11. Hottest clubs in the last five: Atalanta 13 out of 15, Napoli 13 out of 15 points possible, and Inter with 12. Coldest clubs in the last five: to be relegated Parma with 0, Benevento looking bad for them with 1, Verona struggling at mid-table with 2, and Bologna with 3. So again, that Juventus-Bologna match also would be a shocker if Juventus doesn't win it. So Milan is going to have to be very careful against that attack of Atalanta, but they're going to have to figure out a way to win that match.
Yes, they are. And I mean, we have seen some shockers from Juventus this season, but hopefully Andrea Pirlo now has that experience to take care of business when he needs to.
And that would be great for American Weston McKennie, and of course a favorite of ours, the Arsenal alum and Welsh international Aaron Ramsey.
Yes.
So moving to the Bundesliga, here are the top storylines. The big news is that they played the final of the Deutsche Pokal late last week, and Borussia Dortmund smashed RB Leipzig 4-1, a tribute to their outgoing manager, Edin Terzic. Dortmund got braces from the red-hot Jadon Sancho and from?
Who else?
Erling Haaland. A very strong showing from a surging Dortmund squad. Rusty, who might hire Edin Terzic, as he seems ready for a head coaching job right away, and neither of us thinks he will learn a ton working alongside new Dortmund manager Marco Rose.
Yeah, I mean, after this game, I'm not entirely sure how big an upgrade Rose is on Terzic, but I think that there will be a lot of German teams who will need a new manager, and Terzic should be on their radar. He should probably be at the top of their list, because you could see just after the game how much it meant to the players and how much Terzic himself meant to the players, because they sort of raided his press conference, gave him a beer bath, and it just looked like a lot of fun. So I think Terzic could be a big loss for them just in terms of the culture there, and I'm not entirely sure if it's the right decision. Maybe he'll be back. Maybe he will end up staying at Dortmund. I don't think he should. But yeah, there are going to be a lot of vacancies with the whole merry-go-round happening in the Bundesliga.
Well, whether he stays or not might depend upon his freedom of movement mid-season if a manager gets terminated.
True.
Because if the rule or the custom is, well, you're an assistant here, you can't go, then he might just take the time off and wait for that opening to come. And I'm sure he'll get some good advice on that. The second biggest piece of news is that Robert Lewandowski tied Gerd Müller's league record for goals scored in a season with 40. And this was considered to be an unbreakable record. And remember that the Bundesliga only has 34 matches and not 38, because there are only 18 teams in the league and not 20. And this after Lewandowski missed about a month owing to injury. Lewandowski has a chance to break the record this weekend in Bayern Munich's final match against Augsburg. I'm sure they will be feeding him the ball, as they have some very good assist men on that team, including the league leader Thomas Müller. The third biggest piece of news is that Champions League spots are all settled, and it will be Bayern Munich, RB Leipzig, Borussia Dortmund, and Wolfsburg advancing. The fourth biggest piece of news is that the intrigue this weekend is at the bottom of the table, with a few clubs battling to avoid relegation in the relegation playoffs, among them Cologne, Werder Bremen, and Arminia Bielefeld. Borussia Dortmund took care of business in league play with a 3-1 win at Mainz. Mainz on a very good run of form, too. The winners got goals from Rafael Guerrero, Marco Reus, and Julian Brandt. They had 66% possession in the match and won their 7th match in a row in all competitions and their 7th match in a row in the Bundesliga. They got hot at the right time. And the only other match of real consequence, lowly Schalke put fading Eintracht Frankfurt out of its Champions League hopes, or out of its misery, and put them solidly into Europa League play with a 4-3 win at home at Schalke. Among the goal scorers for the winners was American Matthew Hoppe. Eintracht Frankfurt only managed 4 points in its last 5 matches. Not a good showing by Adi Hütter.
He's on his way out.
On his way to, is it?
Mönchengladbach.
Borussia Mönchengladbach, that's right.
And so the standings, one match to go, 33 matches down. First place, the champions, the Meister, as they call them in Germany, Bayern Munich, 75 points. Second place, 10 points back, is RB Leipzig. And then tied on points in third and fourth place, respectively, are Borussia Dortmund and Wolfsburg. And then in fifth place is Eintracht Frankfurt with 57 points, 4 points back from the top four. Statistical leaders, I'll run through this. Robert Lewandowski, obviously top of the charts in goals with 40. As we said, he missed a month due to injury. This is insane. Good for him. He's followed by Andre Silva, who could be on his way to a bigger team, maybe a Harry Kane replacement. Erling Haaland is third with 25 goals.
Yeah, Silva has 27.
Yes, Silva has 27. And then Wout Weghorst of Wolfsburg.
Yes!
Fourth place with 20, so there you go. And the assist leaders are Thomas Müller with 18 for Bayern Munich, and then two Eintracht Frankfurt players follow him, each with 12, Filip Kostic and Daiki Kamada. Hottest teams in the last 5 matches, Borussia Dortmund, they have 15 out of 15 points. Bayern Munich have 10 out of 15. And the coldest clubs in the last 5 are Werder Bremen and Schalke, both of whom have American strikers.
Yes, and one of whom is automatically relegated, and one of whom it looks like it could be relegated. Moving on to Ligue 1. All Lille needed was a win at home against 11th place Saint-Étienne to clinch the title. But it wasn't meant to be, as they drew 0-0. Now Lille needs to win at 12th place Angers to clinch the title. In the Saint-Étienne match, Lille had 60% possession and managed 14 shots to Saint-Étienne's 8 and 3 shots on goal to Saint-Étienne's 1. But they just could not find the back of the net, and Christophe Galtier's man blew a golden opportunity. Meanwhile, PSG kept the pressure on, winning at 10-man Reims, 4-0 behind goals from Neymar, Kylian Mbappe, Marquinhos, and Moise Keane, and that is a murderer's row. Reims went down to 10 men at the 10-minute mark when Younes Abdelhamid was sent off. PSG had 58% possession, 28 shots and 10 on target. Their win cut Lille's lead to 1 point. If Lille wins at Angers, it's over, but a combination of factors could give PSG the title. PSG's last match of the year is at 16th place Brest, but that's only 3 days after they play midweek in the final of the Coupe de France against Monaco in what should be a grueling game. Meanwhile, Monaco remained a point ahead of Lyon for the third and final Champions League berth as they beat 10-man Rennes at home 2-1 thanks to goals from Wissam Ben Yedder and Alexander Golovin. And remember that name, Alexander Golovin. The Russian has a bright future ahead of him. They play at 6th place Lens on Sunday to try to finalize their Champions League berth. Meanwhile, Lyon smashed Nimes at Nimes 5-2. That's to be relegated Nimes. Thanks to a brace from Lucas Paqueta and goals from Memphis Depay, Houssam Aouar, and Islam Slimani, Lyon plays at home against 9th place Nice to try to pass Monaco for the third and final Champions League berth. So the standings through 36 matches for most teams, Lille are actually through 37 matches. Lille 80, PSG 79, Monaco 77, Lyon 76.
That is close.
That is close. Very statistical close. Leaders, Kylian Mbappe leads all goal scorers with 26. Memphis Depay of Lyon is tied with Zinedine Farhat of Nimes and Dimitri Payet of Marseille as the assist leader with 10. And Depay also has 20 goals. He could also be a Harry Kane replacement.
He's out of contract this summer. Could be going to Barcelona.
Right, that's the rumor. And hottest clubs in the last 5, PSG with 13, Monaco with 12, Lyon with 12, Nantes with 12, and Lille with 11. The coldest clubs in the last 5 matches, Reims with 2, Dijon 3. Now, Dijon is already relegated. 6-way battle for the spot in the relegation playoffs as Nimes and Dijon have clinched those relegation spots, as I just said. So we're going to go to some soccer headlines for the week. Just a quick update, but the four undefeated teams, Cervena, Zvezda, Slavia Praha, Sporting Lisbon, and Rangers, do not remain undefeated in league play as one of them lost. Mm. Third place, Benfica, which has a great record, by the way, and a great goal differential. Good defense, good offense. They beat Sporting Lisbon in the Lisbon Derby 4-3, thanks to a brace from Swiss international Haris Severovic and individual goals from Pizzi. He has like four or five names, but he's called Pizzi.
Okay.
And Lucas Verissimo. Benfica led 3-1 at the half and went up 4-1 right after the half, and that was all she wrote. So, Sporting Lisbon, they do have a big consolation prize. They won the league for the first time in 19 years, but they will not go undefeated.
Could be worse for them, I think, but it is unfortunate to not have that undefeated record with your team's name. But it's getting closer to transfer season. Arguably the most wonderful time of the year if you have an internet connection and run a blog, because you will get those internet hits from just making things up. But here's some things that are actually happening from what we can tell. The French international Ibrahima Konate, seemingly one of the seemingly dozens of good young French center backs, and currently Dayo Upamecano's partner on the back line at RB Leipzig, he will be headed to Liverpool this summer where he will fight for a starting spot alongside many players who could be Virgil van Dijk, Joe Gomez, Joel Matip, Ozan Kabak,
Nat Phillips,
Reese Williams, Davies, I forget his first name, who they signed in January. Yes, so many players can play center back for Liverpool. The question is who will stay healthy.
Right.
Konate does not have the best injury history, and they have their top three center backs already on the team.
Viewed to have a better upside than Upamecano, by the way.
Yes, he's 6'4", and a great athlete, and it'll be fun to see him in the Premier League. And William Saliba, another big French, young French center back. On to Arsenal. Rumors are flying, as they always do, about this club, about who's staying and who's leaving, but it has been confirmed that one Brazilian, David Luiz, will be departing the club at the end of the season, and rumors persist that Willian will not return to North London either, with potentially Inter Miami wanting to bring him to South Florida. I will reserve my thoughts on that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, David Beckham wanted to get Messi and Ronaldo in MLS, but he ends up with Ryan Shawcross and potentially Willian. Again, I will...
But Blaise Matuidi, who's 33 years old, might get a call-up to the French national team, so who knew?
Who knew, yeah. But they also messed up with the whole designated players thing when they had four, but it's common knowledge that you can only have three. Anyway, enough about Inter Miami, but also it appears that goalkeeper Bernd Leno will be staying at Arsenal. The Gunners, surprisingly, have had one of the best defenses in the Premier League this season, but they have horribly predictable and uninspiring attacking play, and Mikel Arteta really needs to invigorate their attack with some new players and just a change of philosophy, because they have a lot of speed, but they don't really like to use it.
Right.
Rumors have swirled around former Bournemouth manager Eddie Howe. It was reported that he was in talks with Crystal Palace, but that those talks broke down, and he could be headed to Celtic, but nothing has been confirmed, so Eddie Howe, always one to watch. Rumors continue to build around Tottenham Hotspur, where Lazio's Simone Inzaghi, who we reported about a month ago as a rising star in the managerial world, is the favorite to succeed Jose Mourinho and the interim manager Ryan Mason. Also said to be under consideration are Brighton and Hove Albion's Graham Potter, Leicester City's Brendan Rodgers, Fulham's Scott Parker, and the Belgian national team's Roberto Martinez. Inzaghi would be a creative choice for Daniel Levy, who seemingly wants to be the Jerry Jones of global football, with world-class operations and a lot of different things going on in that stadium.
Yes, and I'm not so sure he always knows how to stay out of the way, but then again, he was the one who wanted Gareth Bale back. Jose Mourinho didn't want him, and it turned out Levy might have been right. There's a lot of magic in the boots of Bale that he showed once Ryan Mason started to play him. And fascinating, the stories out of the UK are that Levy can't afford to spend on an expensive manager who will want a lot of severance. So it could well be a short contract, and it could well be someone who is not necessarily the big international mega name. One reporter said they should get Ralf Rangnick and help the rebuild. He's a name that pops up as frequently as Max Allegri's.
I think,
who knows?
I think that Levy and Ralf Rangnick would get quite a few concussions from butting heads so often. in terms of personnel decisions and financial decisions, because Ralf Ragnick likes to have sole control of whichever team he is in control of. So
now, Rusty, by the way, because this game will not finish before we go off the air, and again, we are recording the show on a Tuesday, with 12 minutes to go, Chelsea leads Leicester City 2-1. Chelsea has scored not only Rudiger, as we mentioned before, but they also got a penalty from Jorginho. And then Koichi Iheanacho, one of the candidates for most improved player of the year and someone who could make a retirement of Jamie Vardy, give it a softer landing, scored. If this result holds, very good news for Chelsea and Chelsea fans, very bad news for Leicester City fans. It means Leicester City really needs to beat a Tottenham squad that has something to play for on Sunday. And Liverpool, relatively speaking, has some minnows to swallow in its march. So if Leicester were to lose, they're in fifth.
Wow.
If they lose out, which is predictable. And we had talked about this a month ago, and I don't want to call myself the Nostradamus of the Premier League, but I said that I thought West Ham or Liverpool would leapfrog over Leicester just because of the fact of the brutal schedule that Leicester had at the end of the season, and because they've had a bunch of injuries. James Maddison just coming back. Mm-hmm.
James Justin,
one of their fullbacks, has been out. Harvey Barnes, who's had a wonderful season, is out. So Brendan Rodgers done a marvelous job, but it's a tough row to hoe for a very game Leicester City team. But who knows? Maybe in the last 11 minutes they score twice and win the match. They have it within them.
Yeah, who knows? They do have that within them. They are a lot of firepower on that team. But Rich, we've talked about this before. The French league is in a bit of a conundrum right now. The finances are not stable unless you're PSG and owned by a sovereign nation with lots of resources. So some of these French players in Ligue 1, maybe not all of them are French, but some of the players in Ligue 1 could be available for transfers. So there are quite a few big names. It's pretty much the League of Shining Stars in Europe. Lots of good players. Top of the list for every big team in Europe is Eduardo Camavinga. I saw him linked to PSG for just, in quotes, $36 million. That's affordable for for pretty much every Premier League team if they wanted to spend all that money on one player. Well, where do you think he'll go?
In our last minute, I think we've seen a shift change. And I think we've seen a shift change with some career trajectories. Look at the disastrous move of Donny van de Beek to Manchester United. He hasn't been able to get into the lineup, but look at the brilliant move by Erling Haaland from RB Salzburg to Borussia Dortmund, and Gio Reyna at Borussia Dortmund. Younger players don't want to go and be part of a laundry list of players. They want to know where they can build their careers. Yuri Tielemans went to Leicester City. Had he gone, say, to Tottenham, he might have been caught in a jam at midfield because Harry Winks was homegrown and they wanted to give him a chance. So if Camavinga is well advised, he's still very young. To go to a PSG where he really has to fight for time, he's too young to do that. He really needs to go to a place to play. So whether he stays at Rennes, or if he were to go to another club, maybe if he goes to an adjacent country and goes to Spain, maybe you go to Sevilla, or maybe you go to a rebuilding Valencia squad if they have money now. Or if you go to England, maybe you go play for Hasenhüttl at Southampton, if they can afford it. Now, that's the other thing.
And his agent is Jonathan Barnett, who is a super agent and will probably want to tidy some for his money.
Right. Well, anyway, we will discuss Eduardo Camavinga and other things next week. It is time to go. We'd like to thank our engineer, the amazing man behind the glass, no longer wearing a mask because he doesn't have to, although he does optionally, Brett Kronberger. This has been Unexpected Goals. I'm Rich.
And I'm Rusty.
Have a great day.